Welcome to the instruction period this morning. Today we come to the third foundation of awareness. And the third foundation of awareness or mindfulness is mindfulness of mind states or mindfulness of mental formations. Can we have the translation again for mental formations? Yes. So our mind has the capacity to think, obviously, to have lots of ideas, to reflect. But the mind also has this extraordinary capacity of awareness. So we know we are thinking because we are aware of the thoughts. So we have to understand that we can come to and rest in the awareness that's revealing the thought rather than be caught up in the thought itself and the story of the thought, the ideas. The mind that wants, for example. Sometimes, of course, we're also caught in negativities or resentments or irritation or frustration. So our practice is one of just checking out, oh, what's my mind state today? Am I caught up in greed? Am I caught up in wanting? Do I want my meditation experience to be different from how it is? Am I irritated? Am I annoyed? And one of the other mind states, of course, is confusion, delusion, not seeing clearly. Sometimes when we check out what's going on in our mind, the mind's rather elevated. Sometimes the mind feels rather dull. Sometimes we think, oh, I'm just caught up in everything today. And at other times we might feel rather free. Sometimes the mind's distracted. And sometimes we're quite focused. These are just some of the dualities of mind. And we have this wonderful capacity to see and to know for ourselves through our awareness of what's actually going on today. And so we just check, oh, what's the quality of my mind state today? Knowing and understanding, of course, that this is not fixed, that what happens in the mind is shifting, changing, also impermanent. When we bring our attention to mindfulness of mental formations, the Pali word is citta, and it means not only what goes on in the head, but also the heart. So, in essence, citta is non-dual. We don't have an English word for it that's really precise. It is both head and heart, and sometimes I'll say heart, and sometimes I'll say mind, or even heart-mind. Citta is a better word in a sense because it means the totality of the way that we meet the world, with our heart and with mind as well. Sometimes citta is translated as psyche, and that's not a bad translation either. But as we sit and practice, we can actually have the direct experience of head and heart being together, not being separate. Sometimes they say the meditation journey is just this long from here to here. only this long. So we need to look at it in this way. You'll notice, of course, when you start to sit that the mind wanders through the fields of time. The mind goes to the past. And often we're caught up in regretting, or we're caught up in a deep sorrow, or perhaps a trauma from the past that's impacted our life. We can be caught up in the present, evaluating, analyzing, interpreting. Or, of course, we can be caught up in the future, worrying about something that hasn't happened yet. So the mind goes to the future, and we can be anxious, especially in these rather uncertain times that we as human beings all face. We don't really deal well with uncertainty. We don't deal well with change a lot of the time. We want the impermanent to be permanent when our life suddenly is even and nice and things seem to be wonderful. We want that to stay. But of course, everything changes. So mind goes to the future, planning, fantasizing, worrying. So we need to see and understand ourselves and understand what's actually happening inside, day in, day out. The way that we work with our emotional world is as I described yesterday in the inquiry. We bring rather tender, loving attention directly to the sensations in the body. Our thoughts and beliefs and ideas form and fuel our emotions. Fear becomes fear through constructed beliefs and anxiety and projection into the future. Anger is formed by certain beliefs we hold. It can be life's not fair. No one understands me. Or I'm unworthy, I'm unlovable. There's something wrong with me. All of these are mental formations, and these thoughts and ideas that we hold to color and shape consciousness and can bring about extraordinary pain. So part of our practice is really understanding this process of how thoughts are added to our initial sensations in the body, the feeling tone of experience, and then form into an emotion which seems to us to be crystallized. And sometimes we see it as solid when it really is not. It's a mass of shifting, changing sensations, thoughts, and ideas. Thoughts are empty. They're invisible. They just come, thousands of them a day. We tend to think they're our thoughts and they're a bit precious because they belong to us. But that's an error of seeing. Thought is simply thought. It's a thought formation, not me, not mine, actually. Every thought that arises ceases. It ends. It comes to an end. And sometimes it's just wisdom to see the thoughts arising and to allow them just to cease of their own accord. And notice when the thought ceases, right there is a moment of peace. So now coming to the Anapanasati Sutta. Again, there are four instructions in this section. And the first one is simply to breathe in, experiencing the heart mind. So let's do it. Again, just for a few minutes. We're checking in with ourselves. We're just seeing what's present and what's absent. today. Breathing in, experiencing the heart mind. Breathing out, experiencing the heart mind. So I'm curious to know, what did you experience today? Anybody? There's no wrong answer to this. Yes. Yes. Say that again, please.
Just asking, how am I? How is my mind?
Yes.
My
yes. Oh, you asked, how is my mind today? And right there was kindness and care. And the very asking was beautiful in and of itself.
Yeah, that
made it,
that shaped the answer in a way.
Ah, so the way we apply the attention shapes the response. Beautiful. So when we apply very tender, caring attention, fine, light attention, just checking what's going on, then we see. sometimes what we see is light and kind, and there's automatically care. At other times it can be quite different. Somebody else. Yes. 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 So the mind today felt focused. So there was some ease of being with the mind, the absence of any kind of turmoil. Ah! Yes. Yes. Love. Yes. Okay. When the mind is focused, it's no longer distracted, darting from here to there. Because what we tend to do is the mind catches on to one idea or thought or condition or sensation in the body. And then we don't like that much, so we shift to another one, thinking that it might be better. So we shift our attention to another idea, or another thought, or another sensation. And then we shift somewhere else sometimes. But when the mind is focused, there's a steadiness of being with, there's a way of looking where we can embrace everything that's happening from a place that feels rather still. So we rest into our awareness. We rest into unwavering awareness. And from that we see what's happening. Yes.
I felt a difference between when I focus on my mind.
Yes.
When I focus on my heart.
Yes. Yes.
And when I focus on my heart, there was calmness and kindness of myself.
Yes. So where are you going to focus? Will you make the messy thoughts your focus, or will you shift to your heart?
Better to find a connection.
Yes. Yes. Exactly. We need to be our own best friend. We need to make friends with the mind. And then heart and mind are not in division. They're not opposing one another. They're together. And this lovely quality of the heart that we can fairly easily touch into has the capacity to calm the mind a little bit. The mind that's rushing on with all kinds of thoughts. Yes.
And when a thought came up, I said, this is not happening, this is not real.
Yes.
And then I asked myself, what is happening now? What is that exist? And it brought me back to my breathing.
Yes. Sometimes we can have the thought or the idea that thought is not real. We have to be really careful here. Thoughts arise and cease due to causes and conditions, just like anything else. A thought does not exist in and of itself, yet we can know a thought that's arising and ceasing. So when we say that thoughts are not real, we have to be really careful about that statement, because what we need to look at is the way in which a thought exists. So we're not denying the existence of thoughts, we're looking at the manner in which a thought exists. And when we say thoughts are empty, that is the way in which the thought exists. The thought actually doesn't exist discreetly in and of itself as a single thing, but it arises dependent on something else before. So if I look at you, I know, oh, here I am at Endor, the thought comes. It's dependent upon my perception here. So sometimes we don't make the connection about where and why and what the conditions are that bring about the thought. We can't, because it's so vast. There are lots of conditions that contribute to any single event. We tend to personalize thoughts and see them as me and mine. This is an error. Thought is just thought. And if we take the personal out of it and just see it as a thought, then there's an ease of being with the world of thought. Thoughts don't become such a problem. Yes?
I find it confusing a little bit.
Yes.
When we cut your eyes,
yes.
How the feelings, you know, we were talking yesterday about joy, and then, because when I come with peace to my meditation, that I have joy and I have peace,
yeah.
And I feel my heart, and I feel, you know, all this.
Mm-hmm.
Things,
yeah.
All together. When I don't come in peace to the meditation, I don't feel my heart. I don't feel. So it's like, why are we like making you know, categorizing the feelings that we feel if we come to the meditation in peace? And, you understand me?
Not quite.
Yeah.
Okay. Say again.
Yeah, yesterday we were talking, okay, we were breathing in, mm-hmm. and we were feeling joy. Today we,
yeah.
were breathing in and we were feeling our heart, mind.
Yes.
Okay, so it's like categorizing,
yes.
the feelings.
Yes, yes.
And
okay.
Actually, if I come in peace to the meditation, I feel everything. I feel joy, I feel.
And if you come in agitation, you feel agitated.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. So, the reason for cultivating joy is, as I said yesterday, it's very important to awaken the heart-mind. And I think it's rather interesting that in the sutta it comes before the section on the heart-mind, because it's a skill we need prior to investigating the whole of the mind. The night that the Buddha sat under the Bodhi tree in Bodh Gaya, on the night of his awakening was actually triggered by a memory that he had. He had a memory of sitting under the rose apple tree. I'm getting shivers as I say this. Sitting under the rose apple tree as a child. And he was watching his father, and he was just innocently under the tree, and what came upon him was extraordinary pleasure and bliss and joy. And the Buddha, of course, had practiced all of these, you know, strong practices that included the mortification of the body and not eating, and he was, you know, super thin and so on. He'd practice all these really harsh ideas based on the fact that it was problematic to feel joy. When he had the memory, he thought, oh, perhaps this is unproblematic joy, and perhaps this is the way to awakening. And then, of course, after that, after he made that shift, he had this extraordinary night, his single excellent night under the Bodhi tree in Bodh Gaya, where he had insight after insight after insight into the nature of reality. So this is why we practice joy. Yes, when we come and to the meditation and we feel joy, as we just heard, when we come with kindness, in a way it does show us what is there. But often in this life, we do come to unpleasant feeling. We do come to suffering. We do come to the difficult. You know it here in Israel. There is suffering. You really know suffering. So we need to come and find a way, a wise way of being with the totality of our feeling world. Whether it's dramatic, painful, difficult, or whether it's loving, joyful, and easy. Our awareness reveals that whatever is there, without discriminating, awareness doesn't pick and choose. Okay? So when we're aware, we have this kind of broad capacity, if you like, of being really aware, where our awareness can include all joy, all sorrow, all gain, all loss, all success, all failure. Yes?
I noticed that I have the idea of focus.
Yes?
Focus and not getting stories in my mind. But then I feel like fear. I feel like tense. I want to stay there, but there is no place.
So you have an idea about focus, and then fear comes.
Yes.
What's the fear? Oh, the next breath won't come? Or shallow breath?
Maybe. Small, not a lot of space.
If you explore more, you come directly to the sensation in the body. So when the fear is there, where's the sensation? So when we experience fear, fear is anxiety, we come directly to the sensation in the body. And we put loving attention there. And then we can ask, is there a belief associated with this? Because fear is constructed. And we add to this initial sensation we have, we add to that with our story, with our wants, with our desires, with our beliefs. This is how fear is constructed. So we have to see it, but the quick method to break through anxiety is the Buddha's method, where we put the attention exactly in the body where the sensation is that's associated with the fear. It's a shortcut to reduce anxiety. So there'll probably be an inquiry or two about this later today, I'd say. And we can explore more. Let's move on. Yes? Yes. 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 The feeling tone, the Vedana, the feelings condition the thoughts, and the thoughts also condition the feelings. It's a circle. One conditions the other. When we think a lot, when we have quite dramatic thoughts about something, then we also have the feelings arising in the body, and the more the feelings become intense in the body, the more we think. So one conditions the other. It can be. It can be. It can be that way. Or it can be the other way. The mind state's dull and heavy, and so the feeling tone changes. Let's go on to the next instruction. The next instruction was made famous by Thich Nhat Hanh. The next instruction is about gladdening the heart mind. And the way that he put it was to sit with a half smile. So the instruction from the sutta is to breathe in, gladdening the heart mind. Can we have a translation? Are we clear about what it means now? Gladdening? Yeah. Ah, gladness and joy are very close. Okay? You just don't ask me the difference. You ask yourself the difference. You just sit with it and see. Okay? There's gratitude, joy, and gladness very often seem to go together. If you're struggling and you're in a lot of pain, then please practice some gratitude because it will open out consciousness a little bit. It'll loosen the grip of the painful mind. So let's just try it. Sitting, breathing in, breathing in, gladdening the heart mind. Breathing out, gladdening the heart mind. Did anyone have a direct experience of gladness? Yes.
I was glad that I could be with my pain.
Oh.
To be present, it feels wonderful. And I didn't fight it, and I didn't feel like there was something wrong with me.
Oh. I just felt. Yes. Glad that I can be with my pain. And then we don't have to think there's something wrong with us because we're experiencing pain. Beautiful. That in itself brings a release, doesn't it? A friend once said to me very potently and very powerfully, as he was there with his dead daughter, who was a dear friend. He was a dear friend, and the daughter was one of the young girls in the community. She'd had an accident and fallen and died. He said to me, Radha, it's okay when I'm really with the process. When I'm really with the process, it's okay. When he was not right there with the process, the pain increased tenfold. So to be with and to be glad to have the capacity to be with the difficult is a beautiful and wise quality of the heart. Anyone else? Gladness, yes.
Feeling of the chitta is not, you don't feel it in the body.
Yes.
Like the joy. So it caused me to smile.
Yes.
But it was separated. It was two things. The joy and the smile was part of the feeling.
Yes.
But here was two. Was the chitta feeling?
Yes. Okay, so was it a pleasant experience? Was it a pleasant experience? Yes. Was there any problem? Okay. No problem anywhere. Hello. So you see, just when we practice in this way, we are released. We're released from our pain, our sorrow, our suffering. Can be. Lovely. Yes. Yes, you. Yes. Yes. Connection. Yes, a pipe in between.
And there was a third part was the caregiver.
Ah.
It made me smile.
Yes.
Real for, like, I was giving love to both parts, and I could see the connection, and I could see all three in one.
Ah, lovely. So the simplicity of just being all three at once, and the link is care. The link is kindness. The link is being friendly to ourselves. Beautiful. Yes.
I feel like a visual person.
Yes.
And I also imagine the pipe.
Yes.
The head and the heart. But I don't know if it's good that I fantasize about like how visually it looks and. Mm. I see light and I see particles and I see stuff and I'm like, am I too visual or not? Should I enjoy it? Because it's fun. I like it. I see like all the stuff and I'm wow. It's kind of a question.
Yes. Some of us, not me actually, have lots of visual things. And I have an artist friend, she describes her meditations. Oh my goodness, they're amazing. Me, I just sit here rarely anything visual. Okay, a light sometimes, yes, of course. But apart from that, I know if I have something visual, I know it's incredibly significant. So we have different attributes of mind. Some people will be very visual, others not. Both are okay. It's okay to be visual. It's okay not to be. Now, the key thing is not to cling to that which arises as an image, not to get really caught up into it and saying this is really significant or important or amazing and cling to it. The issue is always the clinging. But sometimes the visual unfolding experience can be wonderfully symbolic. And in the symbolism, it's speaking to us. There's a message to be seen. There's something to be known deeply. So in that sense, imagery can be fantastic. And in some traditions, there's, of course, in the Mahayana tradition, there's a lot of emphasis on imagery. In the Theravadan tradition, not so. So different traditions have different techniques and emphasis. It's not problematic to be visual. It's not problematic not to be visual. Both are fine. So you're fine, I'm fine. Yes, at the back. Yes, and what happened when you saw the resistance of the mind to the gladdening and continued to gladden? What happened? It's called practice. Yes. It's an ongoing process. And yes, sometimes in 3 minutes we can have this wonderful breakthrough. At other times we go, oh, I can see something that I need to look at. I perhaps need to soften my resistance or soften the resistance of the thought world. And clinging to thought and having a sense of my ideas being fixed or solid is needs attention and needs release. So well seen. So it's wonderful when we actually can see this. The awareness reveals the tendency to have resistance in the thought world or fixed ideas about what's good, what's not good, what's a good technique, what isn't, and so on. Yes. Oh, okay.
This gladness came together today with compassion.
Okay.
So, as we sat in the meditation, my mind took me to making breakfast today.
Yes.
And there was, I can count failures in the palm of my hand.
Yes.
And they all came up together. I burned the porridge today.
Okay.
I didn't make enough to eat.
Okay.
And so.
Yes.
And I started immediately, almost automatically, to smile about it.
Yes.
And celebrate my failures.
Yes.
Because I remembered that that's the way to learn.
Yes.
Only with compassion.
Lovely. So we're not stuck in failure, not stuck there, but compassion brings release. Beautiful. Well seen. Well done. Yeah. Yes. Yes. This technique. Gladdening the mind is the technique for softening the resistance.
Maybe there's another.
Maybe there's another, yeah. Don't worry, I am full of instructions. You will not want to hear another word from me by the end of the retreat, because I'll give you so many different options. So when we resist, when we feel that we're stuck and our thoughts seem to have crystallized, what we're doing is we're clinging to the thought as mine. That's one aspect of it. So it's to loosen the grip of I am the one who's thinking and this is my thought. And then, of course, because we have a particular thought, we then conclude something about ourselves. We go, oh, I'm an angry person, or I'm in a bad mood today and I'm not going to get out of it, and so on. We draw a conclusion. So we have to see our own mechanism of mind, and gladdening the heart mind, softening, using compassion and care and kindness and love, all helps to for us to see that our thoughts are not solid, they're not fixed, our resistance isn't solid either. It's all shifting and changing. The sensations are just coming and going. So the understanding of impermanence helps us. So there are many things that can help, but this technique in particular of gladdening the heart-mind is wonderful for softening resistance. Yes? She said she felt it in really small waves.
Like expanding, and then the doubt came.
Yes.
Do I really feel it?
Ah, yes.
How do I know that is gladness?
Yes.
It feels like joy a little bit.
Yes.
And then it's like a circle. The doubt of the doubt of the doubt.
Yes. Yes. So when we start doing this, there's too much thinking about and not enough just being with the direct experience. So we have the direct experience of gladness, then the I thought pops in, which is the self landing in the thought world and says, ah, is this real? Do I really know gladness? And then we have another thought about that. On and on we go. This is the thought world. It's called Papancha. We have a feeling about something. We have a thought about the feeling or perception. And then we have another thought about that thought and another thought about that thought until we're in this circular method of thinking. So we need to really cut through and come back directly to the sensations. And trust. Trust. So we feel something directly and then doubt pops up. But the evidence is we just have the experience that showed us something. So stay with that. Yes. Yes.
So especially, I think belief's not about myself, which I can tell myself maybe it's not true or not fixed, but belief's about what will be happening, other people's behavior. What would you do if I really think my beliefs are true and they're warning?
Okay. The best way to deal with this is to really understand the emptiness of thought. We give beliefs reality by adding the self to the thought or the belief. Okay? So it's to see and understand, first of all, the whole construct and notion of self. It's to see and understand the movement of mind to grasp and cling to a thought and say, this is my belief. And the next thought is, I am right. This is true. I think we're right. It's a habit of mind, you see.
But there's a possibility.
Yes.
Some bad belief can still be true.
Some bad belief?
I mean, it's not always wrong.
Yes. Exactly. Sometimes we see clearly and sometimes we don't. And our task is to see in a clear-sighted way. Not with the addition of I, me, and my, but to see things just as they are, as things have come to be. Sometimes we see clearly, sometimes we don't. So we have to look. Am I projecting something onto the outer? Or is something actually happening that is the reality of things? What we tend to do is to be a little dramatic and catastrophic in our thinking. We add to the original situation or the actual situation another layer based on the self-narrative of life. Our task is to learn to be with life without adding a layer of anguish or despair or views or opinions. Because our views, of course, impact. And we have to see the emptiness of our view. A view is fabricated, it's constructed. Over the days, there'll be much more about this. So we're only halfway through our instructions on mind today. So what I think we'll do is we'll come back to them tomorrow. But there's another aspect of mind that I really would like to talk about now. And it is the immeasurable mind. The mind that we can touch that is vast, is spacious. When we drop the self view, when we see in a way that isn't narrow and restricted, and just from the standpoint of I, me, and my, the self, when we see that the self is just formed and constructed, it's a notion, an idea that we've put together. When we see that we don't have to look from there, but we can look in a more open way, a more receptive way, a more vast way, a more expansive way, we touch a way of being that's selfless. And in the teachings, these are called the sublime abidings. So, when we touch into selflessness, when we get a sense of that which is greater than I, me, and my, when we touch into that, we see and know the limitless, the immeasurable capacity of mind. And then we discover a way of being with life where there's ease, where we're no longer self-centered. Capacity to be with life as it is, as it's come to be, we're with the truth of things then. So just touching into a sense of selflessness or vastness is really important. So let's just sit now together. We have 1 or 2 minutes. This is the quick path to enlightenment. 1 or 2 minutes. Just sitting, just seeing if you can just sit with a sense of that which is greater than yourself. A sense of openness, of receptivity, sense of the endless, sense of the limitless. So to summarize, today I invite you to take up the practice of experiencing the heart-mind, gladdening the heart-mind. If when you're sitting you can simply sit in the immeasurable heart-mind, then just do that. Tomorrow we will come to the next two instructions in this section on the third foundation of mindfulness, and they are concentrating the heart-mind and liberating the heart. More excitement to come, folks. But don't wait until tomorrow for liberation. If your heart's free, today will do. So thank you for your lovely responses. Couldn't hear everybody. For your enjoy. Groups are at 12 o'clock again today. Thank you. Walking meditation.